This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. Chances are the next car you buy is going to be radically different. It's going to be a next-generation vehicle that will communicate to other road vehicles, and information will help you drive, keep you safe, and get you where you want to go. There's a lot of talk now about self-driving cars like the Google car. That's a long time away. But what about smarter roads and intelligent highways? We want to hear what you think about this road revolution that's happening right now. Are you ready for self-driving cars, vehicle black boxes, and smarter highways? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. You know, and there's a lot of this research and developing happening right here in San Antonio at the Southwest Research Institute. And join us to talk about what they think the future looks like. And he should know, for our cars and highways, Stephen Dallenbach. He is the Director of Intelligent Transportation Systems. Stephen, welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much for having me.
Are you excited about what the future looks like? Am I overselling it? Am I too optimistic?
Oh, absolutely not. You know, technology is continuing to evolve very rapidly, and we think great things in the future are being able to make cars safer.
So we see the Google car. We've seen probably YouTube's driving around the streets of San Francisco, a blind man being able to go through the drive-through at Taco Bell. You know, it's very exciting. But is that going to be what we're going to be able to have?
Somewhere down the road, absolutely yes. Short term, there's other technologies that you'll probably see more of. You mentioned earlier about cars themselves that have more safety features, the ability for cars to keep themselves in their driving lane, give you different types of warning signals if you start departing your lane or if you're about to hit somebody or somebody's coming up in your side.
Yeah, so it's really hard to distinguish between science fiction and actual science reality and consumer reality, where we're going to go with this. So let's kind of back up a little bit and talk about, why do we want self-driving cars or super smart highways?
Well, and start off with the super smart highways is that, you know, there's been a fundamental problem in this country that the gas tax hasn't changed in many years. And so we lack money to build enough highway infrastructure.
Well, cars are getting more fuel efficient, and you don't pay a gas tax if you got an electric vehicle.
Absolutely. That's one of the problems. And if you look at the funding for the National Transportation Bill, that's one of the problems. That trust fund is going broke. So the issue on the table, first of all, from transportation management systems, which have been being built for about the last 20 or 25 years, is we use technology in most of the urban areas of this country to try to sense what's happening with traffic on the freeway and then warn motorists either of upcoming events or suggest alternative routes to try to help balance out the use of the transportation infrastructure.
It's been an old libertarian saw to say that we should bill people according to how many miles they drive on a highway, and then they pay that. Then that way it's you're only responsible for your own usage. But if you had smart vehicles, I guess that would kind of be able to – you would get an accounting of how many miles you drove, and then you would pay for that, right?
Oh, absolutely. Oregon actually is just completing a year-long study. It's called VMT in our industry. That stands for Vehicle Miles Traveled. And there's a variety of ways to determine how many vehicle miles traveled. And in Oregon, what they're doing is they're looking at pricing by how many miles you drove as opposed to a gas tax. But it's wildly unpopular with the public.
Okay, I can imagine why. So because you probably end up paying more than you pay now.
Correct.
Now, let's talk about what is happening right now. What is available to people? What technology is the most current and, you know, not way out there in the future, but that is accessible, that is going to make big changes?
Well, there's kind of a set of building blocks. And the first block is the infrastructure that's been put in many urban areas that allows us to automate our highways to some degree. And this is where we know how many vehicles are moving down a certain piece of highway. We have the message boards that can give you messages. We have cameras that can look when accidents occur so that we can dispatch appropriate emergency response to that or hazardous materials. But this is a building block for a program that's being done by the United States Department of Transportation called Connected Vehicle. And the concept of connected vehicle is taking your smart highway and going the next step, where you add communications between the highway and the vehicle, and you also have vehicle to vehicle communications, and you can start to dream about what type of data could be exchanged between those different entities.
So that my vehicle would have situation awareness.
Absolutely.
It would know that because each car around me is putting out a different signal, it knows that if I don't know my blind spot and I go into the lane, I'm not going to get in a car accident. It's going to send me some sort of message saying, hey, boy, watch out.
That's correct. And again, the technology today is actually pretty much designed to do that. There are a huge number of institutional issues, though, currently on the table. For example, if you're a car manufacturer, you would probably trust talking to vehicles that you manufactured yourself. But when you start crossing manufacturer boundaries, manufacturer A talking to manufacturer B, how do you have the comfort that the information they're sending you is good enough that you should present to your driver of your car?
So we need some protocols.
Absolutely.
Like the internet. You know, so you can have one type of computer talking to another type of computer. We don't have different internets for different types of computers, right? It's all got to be the same.
Correct. And there are – there's a huge number of standards, and many of them were sponsored out of the U.S. Department of Transportation as Connected Vehicle Program. But now becomes the issue is how do you trust the data? And it's actually a similar thing to the internet. You know, we can communicate anything you want between the internet, but how do you know when you receive that email from the Nigerian that's offering you $1 million, how do you know that's true? And that's the same thing.
I mean,
on
isn't that true? So, but I mean, who's going to try to spoof you to tell you that there's not an ice cream truck next to you?
Well, let me give me possibly a different example is that I'm a father of four daughters, and I would be worried that if people could use this technology and might know where my daughters are when I didn't want them to know. And so that's kind of part of the concern is there's an underlying privacy issue all behind all this. And again, there's a number of technologies available to help implement that. But there has to be a number of institutional barriers broken down to bring some of that to the forefront of application.
And that brings up the black box issue. We've talked about this in the nation for a while, trying to have some sort of recording device, especially that will kind of help clear up insurance issues and who's at fault for things. And people have been resistant to that, even though it could greatly reduce their insurance.
Well, absolutely. And it probably also depends on a perspective. You know, first of all, many cars actually already have those EDRs that are called electronic data recorders, and they record the last maybe minute or two of your driving. But as somebody in his 50s who likes to drive a little faster, I resist the need for a black box, yet I would impose it on my children so I would know how they're driving. And so some of it's a perspective of what you want to be able to do with that information.
All right. Well, we're talking about the future of our personal transportation, self-driving cars, super smart highways, assisted driving. All this stuff is coming down the road and over at Southwest Research Institute. They are making inroads in figuring out what this all is going to mean for you and me and helping us make the most of our commute so that we don't get stuck in traffic. You know, like we said off mic earlier, one little fender bender is all it takes to turn Loop 410 into a parking lot. If some technology was available to help us avoid those things, when we would all be able to have a lot more relaxed driving experience. Anyway, we want questions and call us up. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. We're going to continue this conversation when we come back from the break. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. According to the Department of Transportation, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, 5.3 million police-reported vehicle crashes occurred in the United States in 2011, resulting in about 32,000 fatalities and more than 2.2 million injuries. Those numbers, they think, could be knocked down quite a bit if we had smarter vehicles and smarter highways helping us to get where we need to go without smashing into other vehicles. With me to talk about that, Stephen Dallenbach. He's the Director of Intelligent Transportation Systems at the Southwest Research Institute here in San Antonio. Also on the line, we're now joined by Zachary Dorzoff. He is the Director of the Center for Advanced Automotive Research at the Virginia Tech Transportation Institute. Zachary, welcome to The Source.
Well, thank you very much, David. Glad to be here.
So I'm going to open up with the same question that I shot over to Stephen. Are you excited about where this is going? What is the forecast? What do you think? Where are we going to be in 5 years?
Always an interesting question. I mean, in a nutshell, I'm thrilled where we're heading. And the reason I say that is I've been in the industry in connected vehicles sort of since the forefront for a bit over a decade now, when the idea was sort of, you know, kind of Jetsons-y in a way. You know, we were thinking this is a really neat idea. Wireless internet really hadn't, you know, caught on widespread at that point yet. So everything was sort of, there's this target out there that, and it might work and it might not. And you fast forward today, and we're at a point where most of the technology hurdles have been largely broken down. You know, the things we weren't sure were going to kind of deal breakers back a decade ago are kind of largely overcome. And I called in, you know, just enough time to hear the end of what Dr. Dallenbach was saying, and he was characterizing it wonderfully in that now we've got some of these other types of privacy and security and other problems which are coming to the forefront. But what, back to your question, what really leads my excitement is the potential for this to transformationally change the way that we get around in such a way that we could potentially have a profound impact on crashes and saving lives, which is where I focus most of my time. So for that reason, I'm very excited. Now, 5 years from now, I think 5 years from now is when we could really start to be looking at an environment where these systems are becoming available. And I don't know that the regulatory environment will be there or that they will be mandated on all cars. You know, that remains to be seen. But I think there's a good chance that cars will start to be communicating with each other in a way that's never been done before.
All right, let's get some of our callers on the air. Our phone lines are open. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. Hugh has called in. Hugh, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
All right. I'm pushing 70. I'm lead generation baby boom, and I need a self-driving car in the future, or I have to give up the keys. In fact, I could use one right now. I'd trust it more than I'd trust me.
Okay, and so your mobility is critical. You don't want to have problems driving down the road. Your reaction time's not that good. So a self-driving car, that makes sense for you.
Oh, yes. The only thing I'm worried about is these stories of electronics coming through your tire pressure gauge and taking over your car and driving it for you when somebody hacks it. I don't want that.
All right. Well, I don't want that either. So Stephen Dallenbeck over at Southwest Research, is what do you think about what Hugh was saying and his concern?
Well, you know, first of all, we've developed a number of autonomous vehicles, self-driving cars, and the big challenges you have right now in the industry is the cost of the hardware to implement it. We understand a lot of the technology and a lot of the algorithms and the way to implement them, but you're still looking at $100,000 to $125,000 worth of hardware over and above your base vehicle price. If, for example, you look at the hardware in the Google self-driving car that most people have seen, there's a number of other systems that regular OEMs are manufacturing that may have lesser expensive hardware. The whole issue of cybersecurity, though, is something that we worry about. We actually have a department that focuses on cybersecurity, and we actually focus on hacking automobiles, and it's a real problem. The standards that have been developed over time have a number, or the messages, as you mentioned earlier, have a number of capabilities to protect the data. But if you ever get physical access to a car, there's a large number of ways that you can break into a vehicle infrastructure, which the auto companies are very worried about, and they're spending a lot of money to try to basically foolproof their cars. That's something they've never worried about. If you think about when Henry Ford produced the first car, nobody was worried about cybersecurity back then. And frankly, for many years, we've never thought about the car being connected. But in the current connected world that we're moving to, vehicles are going to become part of the internet, so therefore vulnerable.
Well, you talked about the expense of these vehicles, and that raises what some people are thinking about the future is that your next car may not be one that you actually own. If it is going to cost $200,000 to $300,000 to have the vehicle, then maybe, I mean, when you think of the car you have now, most of the time it sits either in your parking lot at your work or in your driveway at home. Maybe there would be like Alamo or Enterprise. They're going to have a fleet of self-driving cars. And when you need a car, you call up and one drives over and takes you where you need to go. And then it goes off to where it goes to the next consumer right after that. It's kind of like a public personal transportation system that's been privatized. Zach, is that something that seems like is a possibility?
It absolutely is. There's some very complex questions associated with with that type of a model in terms of responsibility when a crash occurs, and you know, what does insurance look like?
Right, the liability question.
And that sort of, yeah, exactly. A lot of liability questions. But you know, fundamentally, the system of transportation where you no longer own a car and dial up a ride is very intriguing because it does defer that cost, and it also allows a consumer, you know, the ability to get a pickup truck on one day and a you know, minivan on the next, depending on their needs.
So, or a Corvette the next.
I think there's a lot of motivation. Or a Corvette, right. Well, you know, interestingly enough, though, how much fun is a Corvette if you're not behind the wheel?
Yeah, that driving is a joy. It is. There is a lot of exhilaration that comes from that. You don't want to give that up.
Exactly.
So, but let me ask you, Zachary, about, you know, but this is about, there's a practicality to this. The highways are over-congested. They say if we have smarter vehicles, then we can get more cars on the highway at any given time because we don't need as much leeway time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about the upside.
Yeah, I mean, of course, there's an upside there just in terms of taking better use of the infrastructure that we have. Infrastructure, highway infrastructure, is extraordinarily expensive, and you can only really build so many roads before – well, you kind of run out of space, and at some point, you know, environmentally and visually, we just don't want to be a country of pavement. So getting more capacity out of the roads we have through technology is a great solution to this growing problem just before us. And, of course, because all those roads were built 50, 60 years ago, they're all starting to crumble. So we've already got this very large crumbling infrastructure problem. And the thought of not only fixing it but improving it is somewhat bewildering. So we really want to find creative solutions to using it more efficiently. Connected vehicles are a step in that direction. And then, you know, the further out future of automating some of those tasks has the potential to open up even more. I mean, there's still some big concerns safety-wise before we'll get to fully automated vehicles. And that leads to some concerns about, well, you're really increasing capacity, say, if I'm still going to rely on the driver taking back over in a critical situation. And the answer is no, not really, because the driver still has to not only respond like we're accustomed to, but also re-engage in driving. You know, if we're off reading a newspaper or answering a text and suddenly we have to drive, then that reaction time got longer, not shorter. So it may have somewhat of a negative impact in capacity in the near term.
Right. Our phone lines are open. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. And we had somebody call in, and their comment was, this is ridiculous. They don't think this is going to happen. So Stephen over at Southwest Research, there is an imagination leap that has to happen here, and some people are not ready to do that, right?
No, that's correct. And, you know, Zach mentioned about the connected vehicle, and you were quoting some statistics about the number of highway deaths, 32,000 back in 2011. Something in the order of 20 to 25% of that is from distracted driving. And so from the connected vehicle approach, one of the thoughts is how do you help automate the car maybe for short periods of time, you know, using both automation on the vehicle, not full-time, not replacing the driver, but put some intelligence on the vehicle, add some information between cars to maybe say, hey, you're starting to veer in my lane. You know, if one car would tell another car that, then you might be able to avoid one of those accidents because the person's texting rather than focusing on their driving.
So this is an incremental rollout. We're not going to go from one day to the next with these self-driving cars. We're getting but more technology. Our vehicles obviously are getting smarter all the time, and now they're able to help us avoid these costly accidents.
That's correct, and the data is about every 20 years the fleet in the U.S. turns over. So if you think about it, if these technologies were already available today, it would be 20 years until a vast majority of the vehicles had it. So rollout is going to take time, and that's one of the challenges that technologists have, is how do we use these incremental improvements on a fleet that only has maybe 5% penetration of vehicles that have the capabilities.
Well, I drive a 20-year-old pickup truck. So does that mean I'm going to get a new one pretty soon? So talk about reaction time and driver taking over. And it seems like with this technology coming that this may be the last generation of driver's ed. And it's going to be, if you don't drive a vehicle, that is a skill. And that is a skill, if you don't practice it, you're not going to have it. So how do you expect people to take over a vehicle if they haven't driven a car, haven't had to do that in 6 months, Mr. Zachary?
Yeah, that is a great question. There is a possibility of developing complacency or losing some skill. And I think the rollout scheme actually ties into that, where, you know, it is likely at least that these systems in the more near term, we'll have kind of a limited area of functionality. So, and we're headed that way now. For example, you know, today I can go out and buy a car with adaptive cruise control, which uses a radar sensor to monitor where the car in front of me is, and it monitors or maintains a consistent following headway or distance. So with that, that's ultimately an automated vehicle system. So, you know, to the caller's point, these are actually starting to come out now. They just don't quite smell like we're thinking of here farther in the future where my hands are off and I'm spacing out. And we're going to continue to see that. You know, they're starting to see some what we call lateral control systems where the cars are starting to help you stay in the lane. Now, none of those are I can take my hands off the wheel. But you can see not too far in the future, okay, my foot's starting to come off the wheel, my hands are starting to come out the wheel. But both of those types of systems have special environments where they work, like on the interstate, for example.
Sure. But, you know, one of our callers called in, didn't he hang up? His question was, he thinks we need smarter drivers, not smarter cars. You know, and so, Stephen, I mean, I don't know if you guys can come up with a gizmo, maybe some sort of electric shock therapy for people who start to text and drive.
I probably ought to leave that one alone. We could certainly probably do some of those type of things, but I'm not sure they'd be well received.
But smart highways, and that is like overlaying the technology on the highways we have now that would make better use of the traffic flow that we have.
Yeah, it's a well-established technology that, again, is in essentially every urban area in the United States and actually across the world. And what we do is we use sensors either embedded in the roadway or many times above the roadway that can monitor traffic flows. And then when traffic flows start slowing down, there's various algorithms that are run to determine, hey, there's a congestion problem coming up. Because what you're trying to do is avoid getting that slinky effect where one person stops and then congestion rolls on for a long time.
Yeah, how soon can you get that in Austin? Because when I go up to I-35, it is crazy, man.
Well, they actually have a system. And the story I tell is I went to school in Austin 30 years ago, and they haven't added a single lane. Downtown Austin. So,
all right. So we are out of time. Thank you so much. Stephen Dallenbeck, Director of Intelligent Transportation Systems Southwest Research, and also Zachary Dorzaff over at Virginia Tech. Thank you so much. This is The Source.